Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, the Homelessness Marathon episode, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This episode of Groundwire was produced on the traditional territory of the Kla'itlay-Tene First Nations at CFUR in Prince George, British Columbia. And we're your hosts, Grant Bichand
and Britt Meyerhofer. In this episode, honoring the life of community radio broadcaster Peter Varin.
But that's the way he wanted to live. He was offered by many different people shelter of various kinds, but he wouldn't take it. He was an absolute free spirit.
Prince George looks to Medicine Hat's success with Housing First initiatives.
Hitting our target and reaching our goal. So in Medicine Hat, when we say that we're ending homelessness, how we define that is that no one has to live in an emergency shelter or sleep rough on the street for more than 10 days.
And a look at the origins of the Homelessness Marathon.
You know, it wasn't really about how important it was. It was that I thought that there would be an audience for it. There was never any question about the importance. You never had to think about that for a second. We've got people who are desperately poor dying on the street.
But first, here are the headlines.
On February 3rd, Powell River's first emergency shelter was opened under the community's emergency response plan due to extreme weather conditions in the area. Over the last few months, a committee with representation from many of Powell River's community organizations was formed in the hopes of getting a homeless shelter opened within the city limits. Applications have been submitted to BC Housing for a permanent shelter, which BC Premier Christy Clark confirmed on her visit to Powell River on January 24th, 2017. According to reports from the Powell River Peak, a community committee recently created a six-condition activation protocol, which includes temperatures near zero with rainfall that makes staying dry a challenge, sleet or freezing rain, snow accumulation, or sustained high winds and temperature below minus 2 degrees Celsius. The shelter is open during these conditions between 8 p.m. and 8 a.m. and has been open nightly since earlier this month. The shelter is located at the Salvation Army and is operating with equipment supplied by School District 47 and BC Ambulance Service. Lynn Adamson, Executive Director at Powell River Employment Program Services, told the local newspaper in January, Powell River needs resources to bring people out of cold and wet weather, but an emergency shelter is not part of the long-term solution for the city's lack of affordable housing. An emergency shelter is simply a temporary solution to what I call a permanent problem, she said. Housing is at the core of solving the problem. For more information about homelessness in Powell River, visit www.powellriver.com. or www.prpeak.com.
That's it for headlines. We'll be back right after this. You are listening to Groundwire Community Radio News, available online at www.groundwirenews.ca.
A family of my own, I'd build on a spot with a few tools I got, grow me some pot, a good way I've been taught. And I'd sit and I'd stare at the pond. Everything's changed or is gone. Barn I used to play in's burned down. Things should have changed north of town. All the people I know keep growing old, but I've never cried for the ones who have died. But I've wrote for them some very sad songs. Everyone's changed or is gone. They put a house on my old swimming hole, and it's an eyesore like you'd never know. My bare bum beach is now out of reach for 200 years. We've all fished here, but now it's for Toronto folk. Everything's gone or is broke. Things should have changed north of town. top of my old lookout hill. We go for walks up there still, and the smiles of mine makes me feel fine. But lately at night I see distant city lights, they're all glowing on my horizon. Everything's changed or is gone. Back at my old hunting camp, the air there's still cold and is damp, and I never could hear another soul out here. In the lake's morning mist, I still wish God exists. Then my coffee boils on an old cooking stove, and I light my smoke when the stillness is broke.
You just heard North of Number 7 by the Joey Only Outlaw Band. Now it's time for our feature story. CFUR 88.7 FM looks to Medicine Hat's Housing First initiative and sees what they are doing successfully and how the community of Prince George can implement those strategies in its own community. Homelessness is an issue that affects people around the world, and different communities in Canada have come up with different solutions and ways to deal with it. Today I want to look at two communities, Prince George and Medicine Hat. Both communities are dealing with homelessness. Prince George and Medicine Hat have programs in place to deal with homelessness. However, Medicine Hat's program have got national attention. Their Housing First, which is in coalition with the Seven Cities organization in Alberta, has been teaming up to make it so that they eradicate homelessness in Medicine Hat. We reached out to the organizers of that program in that community and found out a little bit of information about how they're doing and where we could probably adapt it here in our community in Prince George.
So right now, Medicine Hat, we have gotten a lot of publicity around our efforts to end homelessness here in Medicine Hat. Can tell you that we are hitting our target and reaching our goal. So in Medicine Hat, when we say that we're ending homelessness, how we define that is that no one has to live in an emergency shelter or sleep rough on the street for more than 10 days before they have access to stable housing and the supports they need to maintain it. What it does not mean is that we don't have people experiencing homelessness here in Medicine Hat. We absolutely do have people that still experience homelessness here. One of our keys to success is that, and our measures of success here, is that we connect people very quickly to the supports and services they need. Homelessness should not be a constant state for people.
Now that was Jamie Rogers. She is the managing director of the Medicine Hat Community Housing Society. And I asked her about this very interesting program, and she told me how it started, where this whole thing began, and where it began was with the Alberta government and the Seven Cities.
Seven Cities on Housing and Homelessness was really instrumental in securing funding from the provincial government. The provincial government actually invested $16 million to this group and said figure out how to put an end to homelessness instead of what we typically do is manage it with blankets and soup and sandwiches. So it was really looking at alternative ways back in 2007 to look at viable options to actually get people back into housing and help them maintain their housing as well. So 2007 to 2009, that $60 million was split amongst those seven cities, and it was pilot days. From the pilot days, we came across Housing First as an intervention, and that was the impetus for the plans and the basis, actually, of all the plans in Alberta to actually have a Housing First focus, meaning that individuals, we would first put individuals into housing and then provide the wraparound supports they needed to help maintain that housing.
The Housing First program is fundamentally different than most other strategies because it puts the people into a house and then provides wraparound services after instead of just managing it, as they have been saying. And in Prince George, we have been meddling with the idea of it and looking into it. However, it's still at the very early stages. Carrie Pateman from Community Partners Addressing Homelessness can tell us more.
We have a Housing First program that the CEPA, through the Homelessness Partnering Strategy, did fund. It started in January of this year.
Ah.
And, yeah, so AWAC, it's run out of AWAC, the women's shelter, and it is, they are looking at housing, directly housing individuals. It's really early in the program, but they are seeing some successes and some enormous challenges, because it's the services to those individuals that are housed that is taking up enormous amounts of time and energies. There needs to be these supports in place. As you can imagine, you can't just house somebody who has been without a home maybe their entire life or off and on, and they have multiple issues. So they need the supports in order to stay housed. There's also issues around housing cost and health supports, as well as just life skills.
The Housing First program has seen a lot of success in communities like Medicine Hat, and though Prince George is in its infancy right now, we can expect to see more to coming down the pipe. However, one of the crucial aspects to the Housing First program is the funding and the community input, and that was one of the biggest challenges in Medicine Hat, as when I was speaking with Jamie Rogers, she outlined and said that one of the biggest pushback was getting people's mentalities changed in the community before they were able to buy into the program. Before Housing First can probably effectively take off in this community, we need to see a community shift and also an adequate amount of resources put towards this program. For CFUR 88.7 FM's Due North, I'm Grant Bichand.
You're listening to Groundwire, available online at groundwirenews.ca.
Chris Cook of CFUV attended Peter Varin's memorial service in late January. Peter lived on the streets, refusing to live in any way most of us would recognize as normal. There was somewhere between 1 and 200 people present to hear Reverend Al Tysik's send-off, with many voicing their relationship to Peter. Peter had an environmental show on CFUV. He engaged generations of students in long philosophical debates on all manner of topics.
He lived out of doors, lived rough and looked rough too. He spent all his time pushing carts around, doing recycling and such. But that's the way he wanted to live. He was offered by many different people shelter of various kinds, but he wouldn't take it. He was an absolute free spirit and uncompromising in that. To come to this place, I parked in the underground of the Thrifty Foods, which I'm going back to right now, and I'm entering. And this, as it turns out, and I didn't know this, but this was Peter's home in the last years. He spent more of his nights sleeping here in the underground. He was a regular sight here for years and years. Definitely a one-of-a-kind individual with a great big heart and a deep, deep concern about the environment and a determination to live his values and endure hardships that very few would consider, let alone be able to maintain over a long period of time.
I would like to mention in closing that Peter, in his early 20s, left Montreal and decided to have no contact with his family. That's with his mother, with his sister Agnes, and his nephews. My late wife, was able to get in touch with Peter's mother some 35 years ago. So every time she would see Peter around and about, either at the university or here, my wife would phone his mother in Montreal, unbeknownst to Peter. His mother was overjoyed to get news of her son. And for all those mothers here, you know what it's like to lose a son, either through death or through other reasons. And so when my wife died 5 years ago, I continued to seek out Peter regularly in this area. Sometimes he was difficult to find, as you all know, but often he was easy to find. And I continued with my wife's promise to contact his mother.
A number of years ago, I really got to know Peter because I was homeless here and in my addiction. me and him had a deal that if I stayed sober, it didn't have to be any number of days, just sober in that moment, he would tell me a story. And I didn't understand why, but I was like, okay. And it kept me going because somebody actually cared enough to want me to be sober. And he would always say, where is your home? I said, I don't know. And he said, you'll find it. And he helped keep me safe while I was on the streets. He helped keep me sober. I loved listening to his stories, even if they're more rants sometimes. But I will always be grateful for him and what he did in my life. And that part of this almost 7 years sober is thanks to him.
But in the end, he was just a normal guy who had a lot to say and was a compassionate man who people had time for. And I think for a lot of people, the amazing part was, and he was a homeless guy, as if that's some weird thing, that a homeless guy could have so much to say and be so interesting and be so valuable. And I think what this show of people here signifies is that every homeless person has probably got a story to tell and has got their value, and just because they're not as charismatic as Peter and haven't got as much knowledge and haven't got as much interest in world affairs and whatnot, doesn't mean they're any less valuable than Peter was to us. And I think that if we can go away having lost Peter and maybe put some of that compassion that we have for him onto another guy that maybe we haven't ever said hello to yet, who maybe hasn't got quite as much to say and maybe is a little bit challenged in different ways than what Peter was, but they all have the same amount of value and they could all do with a little bit of love and a little bit of appreciation, like the previous speaker said, a little bit of acknowledgement that they are valuable human beings just like the rest of us. And I think if each one of us could give a little bit of that love that we had for Peter onto the next person we meet that is in a dire situation, I think Peter would look on that as a fitting tribute to him. Thank you very much.
You are listening to Groundwire, broadcasting community radio news from coast to coast to coast.
Now it's time for our community radio report. Ome Sama Rahemtula interviewed Jeremy Weir Alderson, the American Homelessness Marathon director, about the origins and evolution of the Homelessness Marathon.
Welcome to the 19th Annual Homelessness Marathon, a national dialogue of homelessness and poverty in America. The toll-free number for this broadcast is 1-866.
The Homelessness Marathon here in Canada drew its inspiration from the National Homelessness Marathon in the U.S. The American Homelessness Marathon was started in 1998 by Jeremy Alderson, the then host of the radio show The Nobody Show on WEOS, an MPRA and Pacifica-affiliated station in Geneva, New York State. I asked Jeremy what inspired him to start the national broadcast back in 1998 and the importance of discussing the issues of homelessness in the U.S.
You know, it wasn't really about how important it was. It was that I thought that there would be an audience for it. There was never any question about the importance. You never had to think about that for a second. We've got people who are desperately poor dying on the streets. But when I did the first one, it was better received than I would have imagined it even would have been. So I knew there might be a national audience for it, and I wanted to reach that audience.
Though the size of the American Homelessness Marathon has been reduced in the past couple of years due to lack of funding, this year's marathon was held on January 19th from 7 to 11 p.m., hosted by WMPG in Portland, Maine. Jeremy spoke about the highlights from this year's marathon.
Well, it was shorter. We only did 4 hours this year, but it was pretty lively, and we were really happy with the broadcast and happy that we could do it. And things that stick out in my mind, you know, we were in Portland, Maine, which is, I think, considered a hip, you know, city, and we had somebody there talking about all the homeless people getting assaulted and beat up and other things in Portland, and even to me, you know, it's an eye-opener. It just shows you there's just no place that's free of this. And then we had a minister, I'm not exactly sure what denomination, from Dearborn. He's Middle Eastern, but he's a Middle Eastern Christian. And he was talking about homelessness and poverty in the Middle Eastern community in Dearborn. And I especially had wanted to hear from them personally because that's a threatened community under the new administration in the United States, and nobody would ask what's going on to their poor people. And their poor people are, needless to say, afraid, and they have a
have a dual problem of it's hard sometimes to talk about that within their own community.
Each hour during the four-hour marathon started with street poetry, followed by in-depth interviews and discussions with homeless people and their supporters and advocates, as well as call-ins from people across the country. This has been an innovative part of the Homelessness Marathon in the U.S. for many years, where a 1-800 line is set up for people to call in with their comments and contributions.
Street Poetry. Homeless Sneakers by Morgan Brown, published on the internet. Restless thoughts toss and turn without end, deep within mind, body, and soul, whether day or night, about once again becoming homeless. Knowing the only place to then call home 24/7 will be one pair of badly worn-out sneakers long overdue for replacement. Truth be told, however, those foul footwear are in much better shape than the person who will be barely surviving inside them, whose remedy will not be found just by a new pair, but within an abode of their own, one providing a permanent roof and shelter under which to live more restfully instead.
On the phone, we have Eric Sheptock. Eric is the best-known homeless advocate in Washington, D.C., and another person I had the pleasure of working with last year, along with Robert Warren. Eric, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Eric. So, tell people where you live.
I live at the CCNV shelter. That is the Community for Creative Nonviolence. It is a shelter in Washington, D.C., at the intersection of 2nd and D Street Northwest. And on either side of it, we're going to have entrances to the inauguration tomorrow, at 1st and D and at 3rd and D. So it's going to be a lot of action tomorrow.
One of the feature interviews during the broadcast was with an older woman living in Los Angeles, California, in her car while fully employed but unable to find housing because of gentrification in the city.
Your coworkers don't know that you're homeless. What's that like?
I have literally two lives, the life in my car and my life at work. And being invisible, you know, in my homeless life is really important, you know, for cops and things like that. I can't get arrested. That would cost me my job. At work, for people to know I'm homeless, to know that from me, they may suspect it, but to know it from me might mean the loss of my job. So I live in these two very distinct and separate worlds, and it's sometimes tough to separate them.
And how do you do personal hygiene and stuff, I mean, in a car and whatnot?
You know, for folks that are about to go homeless and know they are, it's important that you join a fitness center, the cheapest one you can find with a shower. Mm. I get up at 4:30 in the morning, break down my car, roll up my bed, make my car look spit-shined, and then I head to the fitness center and take my shower. They're used to me. They know me, you know, and I take my shower, and then I go to work.
Though we can't feature all the segments and issues covered in this year's marathon, you can listen to the full U.S. Homelessness Marathon broadcast at news.homelessnessmarathon.org. This has been Omesama Rahimtula reporting for Groundwire Community Radio News.
Today's a window washing day, a good day, I think, to stay or to go away and look for the sunshine, but it's been lost behind human progress. So now we'll build a factory synthetically, supply us all with happy. But I'd rather sit in this sink a while and think about missing out. Today's the day to sweep the street and puke on a stranger's feet, and go to sleep, dreaming about some missing teeth and only missing last week. Well, I don't miss anything but last week, and the last time I laughed at an irony that wasn't mine. But I'd rather sit on these bricks and maybe forget about missing out, and maybe I'll figure out problems are born now that I'm bored, and whether or not I can afford to cling to the familiarity of having something wrong.
immediately to wash away, including staying up yesterday. Not that anything was really wrong with last night. Not that anything was really right or any different than tonight.
Heard Problems by Sober Becky.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced at CFUR on Lheidlatenay First Nation territory in Prince George, British Columbia. Music this week was by the Joey Only Outlaw Band and Sober Becky. Headlines this week were written by Courtney Harrop, and we also thank Chris Cook, Gunnar G. O'Sullivan, Ome Sama Rahemtula, Gretchen King, Braden Alexander, and Carly Forbes. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca.